J. Reynolds Tobacco against cigarettes cheaper.
Representing cigarettes cheaper on this appeal.
Mr. Dittles, what is cigarettes cheaper?
Cigarettes cheaper, Your Honor, was a multi-store.
Well, I'm asking in a technical sense. Is it a corporation? Is it a partnership? Is it a proprietorship?
I'm not sure that I know the answer to it, Your Honor.
Yeah, but you need to know the answer to conduct our conflict of interest check. The statement of interest in your brief does not identify what kind of entity it is. Cigarettes cheaper is obviously not a corporate identifier. In the district court, this case began with the defendant being named Premium Tobacco Stores Incorporated doing business as Cigarettes Cheaper. Premium Tobacco Stores appears to have disappeared. We need to know what kind of entity it is, and indeed you had an obligation under the rules to tell us.
And, Your Honor, I thought we had, and I apologize for that. Is it possible for...
I would like you to file a corrected statement of interest as quickly as possible after oral argument, revealing if it's a corporation, you know, what kind of corporation it is. But Cigarettes Cheaper is not a corporate name. It would not be a lawful corporate name in any of the 50 states. If it's not a corporation, we need to know the other details.
And we will file a corrected statement, Your Honor, and
please
I apologize.
Do. All right, please proceed.
Your Honor, with the counsel table is my partner, Matt Welch. With the court's permission, I will address the antitrust issues present on this appeal. If any time remains, Mr. Welch may briefly address the trademark issues. The two substantive antitrust decisions made in the lower court that we are currently appealing from are the grant of a summary judgment motion to RJR on cigarettes cheaper Sherman Act claim against RJR. That decision was made by the lower court on June 25, 2003. Subsequently, there was a trial of the Robinson Patent Act claim, which took place in the fall of 2004. The result of that trial resulted in a judgment for RJR and against Cigarettes Cheaper on that Robinson-Patman Act claim. I'll begin with a discussion of the Sherman Act claim, although a discussion of the Sherman Act claim also implicates the Robinson-Patman Act claim, because it is plaintiff's assertion, it was plaintiff's assertion in the lower court, that is, Cigarettes Cheaper's assertion in the lower court, that the Sherman Act conspiracy was carried out in part by conduct that was violative of the Robinson-Patman Act. That is to say, RJR, together with selective retailers, conspired to do several things. The first step was that RJR provided discounts, rebates, promotional allowances to its consumers.
Is there any claim in this case that these discounts meet the standards of predatory pricing from Brook Group against Brown and Williamson Tobacco?
That's not addressed in the lower court record, Your Honor.
Well, I suppose it's too late to introduce a claim, but I gather then the answer is no. No claim that this meets the standards of predatory pricing.
We do not claim that the discounts promotions that RJR provides to the conspiratorial retailers.
Then what's the problem with lower prices? And normally antitrust law is concerned about higher prices, not lower prices. There's this special rule for predatory pricing, which is really an exception based on the ground that maybe the predatory prices now will be followed by higher prices later. But if you don't claim predatory pricing, why would a claim of price reductions ever be actionable under the antitrust laws? Unless you're just saying, what we're dealing with is predatory pricing claim, and why should we ignore the requirements for predatory pricing litigation?
Well, I'm not saying that, Your Honor. What I'm saying is the contract, or the combination of conspiracy and restraint of trade began with lower prices to certain conspiratorial retailers.
Yeah, but what's the problem with lower prices? And the court had just got finished saying in Kahn against State Oil that there isn't any problem even with fixing lower prices in conjunction with your retailers.
The problem, Your Honor, is as the conspiracy went on, the state of generating direct evidence in the district court to the fact that also a part of the conspiracy was to fix prices.
That's why I brought up Kahn against State Oil. The Supreme Court abolished the per se rule for claims that a manufacturer, a supplier, and its retailers had conspired to fix lower prices. Not within the scope of the per se rule, the Supreme Court held.
Also part of this conspiracy.
Unless, of course, it's predatory.
Also part of this conspiracy, Your Honor, was to fix the prices of the product of other manufacturers. That is to say, the retailers who conspired with OJR also sold the product to Philip Morris and other manufacturers. Those prices were also fixed. There also was established a price level between the Philip Morris product and the product of other manufacturers, as between that product and the OJR product. So what that does, Your Honor, is it fixes a minimum price for that period of time with respect to the product of other manufacturers. That is to say, the agreement. How? Because there was an agreement as between RJR and the retailers to set the price at which they would sell RJR product, Philip Morris product, and the product of other manufacturers. The reason why this can happen, Your Honor, and what takes it out of much of the antitrust case law here, is that we have retailers in play who are selling the product of all the manufacturers in question. So there's cheaper selling product for all the manufacturers in
question. What is your best evidence that we should look at for the proposition that RJR conspired with its retailers to raise the price of competitors' products?
Special Appendix 191, Special Appendix 552-54
reflect that, Your Honor, both with respect to
that.
Pardon me?
What's your example?
The example is, Your Honor, the conspiracy that RJR entered into with competitor retailers. For example, Bonds and Albertsons. Bonds and Albertsons agreed with RJR to set prices on RJR product. They agreed to set prices on Philip Morris product. They agreed that the price on Philip Morris product would be higher than the price on RJR product. They agreed that the price on the product of other manufacturers would be higher than the price of RJR product. What that does is it fixes
if that's what your answer is, you're not answering my question. I don't see any reason under the Supreme Court case law why RJR and Bonds could not agree that RJR would make a discount payment so that Bonds could sell RJR products for less than Philip Morris products. It would be troubling if RJR had agreed with Bonds that they would raise the price of Philip Morris products in order to raise the price that they could charge for RJR products. But that's the question I was asking you. Where the evidence is they raised the price of Philip Morris products. Is that what your record citations are going to take me to?
I believe the record citations, Special Appendix 191 and 552-554, contain references to agreements to raise prices on all brands after cigarettes cheaper is removed from the marketplace.
So it never came into force. It's like an agreement to raise those prices as soon as men land on Mars.
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Perhaps I misspoke or misled you to a certain extent. I did not necessarily mean until Cigarettes Cheaper was completely out of business. But the conspiracy within certain defined areas in where Cigarettes Cheaper competed with Arms, competed with Albertsons, once Cigarettes Cheaper was no longer a viable competitor with respect to those retailers who had hundreds of stores, once they were no longer a viable competitor, then there was an agreement between RJR and those retailers to raise prices. Indeed, 18 months after the program was put in place at Bonds, the prices at Bonds were higher than they had been at the beginning of the program. But I fear you, Your Honor, also, a point may have gotten lost in my recitation here that I think is important, and if I can, I'll go back to it. That is this. Even before the prices are raised, pursuant to this agreement that RJR had with Moms and RJR had with Albertsons, even before it's raised, they fix minimum prices on whole product product. They fix minimum prices on the product of other manufacturers. In other words, pursuant to the agreement, Bonds and Albertsons could not lower prices on Philip Morris product below a certain spread between Philip Morris and RJR product. That, I submit, is conduct as violative of, in per se violative of Section 1 of the Sherman Act. But then the other steps of this Sherman Act agreement as expressed were that once Cigarettes Cheaper was out of the competitive marketplace in the
United States. The argument you just made is an argument about vertical resale price maintenance. I certainly didn't understand your brief to be making a claim about vertical resale price maintenance.
You are not right.
I'm missing something.
Well, Your Honor, I believe our brief specified the aspects of this conspiracy. What we contend with was this conspiracy, which included elements of fixing prices on the product of all manufacturers, and once CC is out of the marketplace, thereafter raising prices with respect to all that product. RJR's motivation in that regard was twofold. I believe, could be characterized as resale price maintenance. Once CC, a price-cutting retailer, is out of the marketplace, RJR was in a position to raise its prices because no longer would its competitive manufacturer be providing the low prices for Cigarettes Cheaper was providing. So in that sense, I believe it can be characterized as a resale price maintenance case. But there are many aspects of this. One of the difficulties of this, of conceptualizing this case, is because you have both a vertical price agreement, you have a horizontal price agreement, you have product lines of multiple manufacturers being sold by all the retailers in question, Bonds, Albertsons, as well as CC. And it doesn't fit neatly into much of the case law, but I submit that the case law that is out there says specifically, a vertical agreement to fix prices has been illegal in this country for almost 100 years, and there are cases that support that notion in this circuit also, as it would have to, since the Supreme Court made a vertical agreement to fix prices illegal. Your Honor, our evidence in this regard, I believe, was substantial, and we believe the lower court improperly weighed that evidence. It was spelled out in detail on page 3 of our reply brief. But the statements by RJR as to their intention to drive Cigarettes Cheaper from the marketplace are clear. They couldn't be more
asked about driving cigarettes cheaper from the marketplace. Is the province of predatory pricing doctrine, that's what predatory pricing claims are about in antitrust law. And your theory seems to me, to repeat my initial question, that you can win on what is fundamentally a predatory pricing claim without proving any of the elements that the Supreme Court held in Brook Group are required in predatory pricing litigation. You're saying they charge low prices to drive this firm out of business. That is a predatory pricing claim. And in order to win on it, you've got to meet the Supreme Court standards, and you don't claim to do so.
Well, it's not a predatory pricing claim if you are not claiming that they charge predatory prices, Your Honor.
But that's exactly my problem. You seem to be saying we can win on this fundamental predatory pricing theory and avoid the Supreme Court's requirements just by avoiding the word predatory prices.
We can win, Your Honor, because part of the agreement was to fix prices. Fix prices on RJR product, fix prices on Philip Morris product, and the product of other manufacturers. And part of this agreement also expressed was to raise prices.
That at least I understand. If you got an argument, if you got price raising argument or a vertical retail price maintenance, that's an established theory. But it doesn't have anything to do with knocking cigarettes cheaper out of business. And I've just gone back and reread your brief. You discuss resale price maintenance for one paragraph and one page, which is not enough to develop an argument on appeal. But that's a serious problem with your brief. You try to cover so many things that none of them is developed.
Your Honor, let me try this another way if I can. The predatory pricing case law that is out there is case law that is designed to protect decisions made with respect to intra-domain competition, with the notion that in a market with competitors, intra-domain competition will serve to keep any intra-domain restraints from driving prices higher. The critical element here is that the claim between RJR and Bonds and Albertsons is not limited to intra-brand restraints. They also include intra-brand restraints. They expressly articulate that there is a fixed price between RJR and Bonds and RJR and Albertsons to fix prices on Philip Morris product. That's what takes it out of the predatory pricing, or the predatory pricing case law I submit to them. It is the focus on inter-brand competition and restraints. And it is not limited to inter-brand. Now, RGR desperately hopes that we'll ignore that fact and that this court will ignore that fact. Their brief reads as if the only element of this conspiracy was the act by RJR to provide low prices to certain retailers. But it wasn't the last act. It was only the first act. The second act was to fix all the prices I talked about, and not just on intra-domain product. It's to fix prices on Philip Morris, to fix prices on RJR product, to fix prices on the product of other manufacturers. Then, expressly, with the goal of driving cigarettes cheaper out of the market. Then, expressly, one cigarette cheaper out of the market to raise prices, and that in fact happened. So that's why, Your Honor, I believe the predatory pricing citations are inapposite here.
But the story you're telling is a predatory pricing story. Low prices now, knock the rival out of the market, raise prices later. That's the predatory pricing claim. It has certain legal requirements, and you concede that you don't meet them. You don't meet them because the price was not below cost. You don't meet them because your client is still in business. That's two very good reasons why, under Brook Group, you haven't met the requirements.
Your Honor, I submit that none of the predatory pricing cases have the facts that you have reported, which is a direct effect on inter-brand competition and express agreements to raise prices at a point in the future. Those may be matters that I submit the predatory pricing case law that Your Honor has said. The entire backlog of the predatory pricing case law is predicated on the fact that certain restraints within inter-brand competition can potentially allow one to compete better with in the inter-brand market. But part of your agreement, part of your express agreement, is to fix those prices of other manufacturers. And then part of your express agreement is to raise prices once they're less cheaper down in the marketplace. I submit that it is not a typical kind of, it is not a kind of very pricing case, as Your Honor has alluded to. The fact that they wanted to drive cigarettes cheaper out of the market does not shoehorn the facts here into the predatory pricing case law. It happens to be a part and parcel of their Sherman Act 1 plan to drive cigarettes cheaper out of the market and to drive prices higher. The way in which they accomplish that, as I said, is to fix prices on the back of all manufacturers with bonds and without licenses. That's a violation of Section 1 of the Sherman Act, I submit, Your Honor. Even when the price is not a predatory price, it is a fixed price. It is a fixed price on RGR products that's below the fixed price of total North product. Now, what does that mean? That means Barnes and Albertsons has agreed with RGR not to charge lower prices on Philip Morris product. I submit that's violative of Section 1 of the Sherman Act. Your Honor, I will not go through in detail the evidence that we believe the district court improperly weighed in reaching the conclusion that summary judgment should be granted on the horizontal plane. It is important to note, though, that the lower court, in its opinion, granting summary judgment, did not even address the fact that the vertical agreement between RJR and Bonds and between RJR and Albertsons was directed at us. That is also a per se violation of the Sherman Act, but the district court did not acknowledge that. The district court instead reached the conclusion that once we were in vertical land, it was a very losing case, and that because RGR lacked market power, summary judgment was still warranted. Your Honor, I will rely on the briefs on the subject of market power because we don't think the court needs to get there, although if it does get there, I submit that we have sufficient market power. Just a word about the Robinson Patent Act trial. As Your Honor likely knows, summary judgment was granted under Sherman Act, but the Robinson Patent Act violation, that was a portion, we submit, of the conspiracy, part of the conspiracy between RJR, Albertson's Bonds, etc., to violate the Sherman Act, did go to trial. Certain evidence was excluded at that trial on the grounds that it was prejudicial, pursuant to federal rule of evidence 403. The evidence, Your Honor, was powerful. It was relevant to rebuttal. It was relevant with respect to impeachment. And the lower court decided not to admit it, in part because the judge reached the determination that each party had been provided a sufficient opportunity to present its case. I submit that Rule 403 is not designed a determination by the trial judge as to whether parties have had a sufficient opportunity to make their case. Rather, it is a weighing of the prejudicial nature of the evidence versus its probativeness. Not to mention the evidence that was excluded at trial in the Robinson-Kavanaugh case was directly probative of particularly affirmative defenses that had been offered by RJR and which could have been given the law to if had this evidence been admitted. I submit that the lower court improperly assessed or utilized 403 in discarding that evidence. Your Honor, I'll take the liberty of saying to Mr. Walsh that we'll stand in our briefs with respect to the trademark portion of this case, and if there are no other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Certainly, Mr. Gibbons.
Thank you.
Mr. Walsh.